Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, Josh.
It's Lost in the Static. Yeah.
So says you.
Obviously, I just said that, didn't
I? Obviously. So, who are we brought here by?
We are brought here by AdamandEve.com. Using the promo code STATIC, you get 3 free DVDs, a free mystery gift, 50% off of an entire item, and free U.S. shipping. It's so fucking cool. There's no reason to not go to AdamandEve.com.
So, wait a minute. 50% off an entire item.
One item.
So, I pay full price for that item. I only get half of it.
Don't be stupid. Use the promo code STATIC. You know what you get. Well, and hey, we're speaking AdamandEve.com. Deals with pornography, right?
Yeah, they certainly have their share.
And I have had certain issues, not just on this show, but with my other shows, about people, when I'm looking for other advertisers, we don't want to advertise on a show that has like a porno sponsor.
Well, maybe we'll talk to extremerestraints.com.
Well, no, I'm actually using this to seg into the topic.
I know. So, but yeah, a lot of people, a lot of companies, and a lot of folks out there just, they don't want to associate themselves with anybody that has anything to do with the adult industry.
And that's what I want to discuss, because I don't understand this. Why is adult so pariahed in our society, yet adult is what pushes almost every technological development? Adult is something all of us watch, read, look at, listen to. Why is adult this dirty little secret when I think in this day and age, I'm not making a pun, it's totally out of the closet.
And it's
or it should be, at least.
Specifically sex, because there are other adult industries like, well, I'm drinking an adult beverage right now.
You know what we're talking about.
Yeah,
porn.
We're talking about sex.
Porn.
Yes.
Porn specifically.
Yes.
Because, like, let's just look at technological development. This is something I'm sure you are well aware of. Why was 16mm so popular when people could get their little 16mm loops? And why did 16mm projectors get sold? Do you think it was for the people buying the Abbott and Costello movies and the Dracula movies?
No.
No, it was because people wanted to watch porn in their home.
It was cheap to mass produce. You could put out loops really, really easily. And developing the film was easier than with other formats and such. And so it was porn that drove 16mm out there.
And then that progressed into the VCR, VHS versus beta. Beta would not allow any kind of pornography on the beta format. Sony would not allow it. VHS said, we'll take porn. All of a sudden, in the course of 3 months, VHS sales were almost 15 times that of beta.
Oh, yeah.
Gee, do you think it's because people want their fucking porn?
Beta had better quality, better audio quality, better
visual
video quality.
And they were cheaper.
It's
but
just
people
that Sony,
want porn.
Sony was one of those companies that went, we don't want to be associated with any of that stuff.
It's that puritanical mindset bullshit.
It's what I call in this country. And if you look at countries around the world, you've got some countries that are very sex positive and some countries that are very sex negative. Sex positive country would be quite a few over in Europe, especially in, well, everywhere from the Dutch to not just the Netherlands. That's the Dutch, Scott. But
I slap you.
Yes, I know. The Dutch, the Swiss, the Norwegians, the Swedish.
The more enlightened European countries?
A lot of European countries. It's weird because as you go kind of west in Europe, that, you know, especially once you pass France, that whole sex positive, seeing sex as for what it is, not just a way of procreation, but a way of having fun, kind of dies out because you've got Germany, who is still kind of sex positive, and they're kind of into the freaky stuff, and they kind of know everybody's in it, but they don't really put it on billboards.
Most of the weird shit like that's on PornTube, they're speaking German.
A lot of them. A lot of them. And then you've got the English, and again, you talk about that puritanical deal, but the English and those in the UK, yeah, it was you even talked about it when you did your episode of Radiodrome about the video nasties.
Yeah, I was going to say, you couldn't have violence. Oh, no, we got to cut all the sex violence out of movies, right. But you can show all the sex you want.
Right.
Just you do not show, okay, you can show penetration of a penis, but not penetration of a knife.
Right.
That's how weird England was in that time.
But again, they definitely drew that line between sex and violence, and sex was still pretty okay. For some reason, you cross the pond.
To us, we're the exact opposite. The way I put it in my sanity article,
all the motherfuckers you want.
The way I put it in my sanity article was, you can shoot a motherfucker in the face, but you can't shoot a woman in the face with cum. You can shoot him with a bullet, but not with a spooge. That's okay for American television.
Classy. Yeah.
Am I wrong though?
No, you're just amazingly classless way of putting with.
Have you met me?
Yeah, this is a good point. But yeah, for some reason you cross the pond. And to be honest, I haven't really delved into... I can imagine that Canada is a little bit more relaxed about sex than we are.
Yes and no.
I haven't really been exposed to the...
From what I understand, like, you can show titties on normal, you know, 7 p.m. broadcast TV.
Okay.
But... violence is still a big no-no. Like,
see, I'm leaving the violence out of it.
For instance, a Steven Seagal movie. This was a big thing for Seagal movies when they started to get imported in the 90s to Canada. They would leave in the nudity, and in some cases, even add nudity into the movie that was not in the American cut. But every bone break that Seagal did on somebody was edited out of the movie.
Okay,
so you could show extra scenes of boobies and fucking. But good God, you do not show him snapping a guy's foot in Hard to Kill.
Okay, but what it's I'm weird. Saying is the day to day attitudes toward sex and pornography in Canada, I'm not that familiar with. I haven't delved into it that much. I've got a few Canadian friends I should ask. But then you head south and you get to places like South America with Brazil and boy, you want to talk about a sex positive society.
Yeah,
it's out there. It's in the open. It's part of daily life. It's what you deal with.
It's actually legal in a lot of the countries in South America. I mean, you know, it's taxable. You know, being a hooker is a job just like you know, being a waitress.
Well, yeah,
pay your taxes and everything.
Well, one of the most, you know, I mentioned the Netherlands earlier. One of the most famous and most highly taxed red light districts in the world. There you go, right there in Amsterdam, where they will dance in windows for you and you'll get robbed. And trust me, I've known too many guys I went to school with for the 2 years were like, we're going to Amsterdam. Yeah, you go enjoy yourself. And then they'd come back 3 weeks later and be like, we had to scrape and scrounge and beg for money because we went to a cafe and then we went to a hooker's place and we woke up in an alley. But nonetheless, you know, yeah, it's taxed. You've got doctors that they need to go see. It's regulated,
which is what I think America should be.
Well, I agree.
America is missing a huge revenue source by sticking to an idiotic puritanical view. Sex for money is wrong.
And that, frankly, that it goes back to our roots. And it goes
the reason
back,
we left England, you mean?
The reason we left England was because you talk about puritanical.
Literally. That's the exact word I wanted. Yes.
Yes. The Puritans that came over and, you know, people like the Shakers and the Quakers and, you know, nowadays the Amish and the Mennonites and, you know, these are the religions that our country was founded on. And yes, as things went a little bit further, you had the deists come in with, you know, our founding fathers of Washington, Jefferson, et cetera, but they still held to a lot of those Puritan beliefs, and it really stuck. And unfortunately, I think the rest of the world, grew up around us.
Oh, absolutely.
And at least when it comes to attitudes towards sex, I think it's one of the places where America is so far behind the rest of the world. I mean, we're still debating on whether or not homosexuals can get married here. And there are quite a few countries that are, but there are a lot of countries that went, "Yeah, you want to be miserable, go right ahead." You know?
Yeah. You guys want to see each other every day and not have sex? Just do it the same as a straight couple does.
Exactly. Well, and yes, we're being flippant. I realize that there are a lot of things when it comes to like end of life rights and property rights and all this other stuff that you're fighting for.
I'd rather be funny.
But we're being flippant about a very serious issue. But yeah, I think that the rest of the world is starting to grow up around the United States, and we're still hanging on to these conservative beliefs. Even most of the liberals that I speak to, they're like, yes, freedom of expression, freedom of this, freedom of artistic. Well, how about freedom of fucking?
Yep.
No. No. It is for procreation done in the missionary position in the bedroom post 6 p.m. with the blinds closed and not even the cats are allowed in the bedroom.
Right. Literally no pussy. But don't roll your eyes at that joke. You set me up for it.
I rolled my eyes at thee.
But, like, okay, pornography, whether it's still prior in
doesn't exist in this country.
It is the biggest industry. Porno movies make more money yearly than mainstream Hollywood does. Porno magazines in the pre-internet era, and I'm not leaving the internet era,
I know.
The pre-internet era sold more copies than any non-pornography magazine. Well,
that's why there were so many of them.
Right, and you just kind of go, how can this be so underground? When every single person does it.
It's one of those secrets that everybody knows.
I hate open secrets because those are stupid.
Yeah, but, you know, they're there. And I always laugh because, you know, the adult magazines are supposed to be kept out of reach of children. I was just at a gas station. I picked up more of these tasty, tasty Reds apple ales. Thank you, Reds. I'll take the check. But nonetheless, I picked some of those up at the gas station, and the magazines that they still sell, adult magazines, and they're supposed to be up out of kids' reach. I think, at least in Indiana, I know that an adult magazine, unless it was in a special room that was curtained or cordoned off and guarded and carded when you go in there, if they were to be displayed openly in an open to the public room, they had to be at least 5 feet up, which was hilarious because you ended up with these magazine racks with like highlights and word search and Mad Magazine and stuff down, and then this big old long blank wall, and then this little row of adult magazines, you know, 5 feet up off the ground.
Yeah, okay, now the way it's always been, like at the liquor store my dad used to always go to, it was the comic books, and then right above the comic books was Heavy Metal and Hustler and Penthouse and everything. So it's like, yeah, Dad, I'm going to go get the new Conan. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to read The Incredible Hulk.
The ones that I'm talking about, the way that they are displayed at the gas station I was at, they're, number one, they're at maximum 4 feet off the ground, and at minimum they're right down there at ground level, but it was... There's that plastic, you can't see this up on the magazine so that all you see is the title.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay. And then the magazines themselves, you can't really flip through. They're in plastic bags with blacked out fronts.
But, I mean, like, even when it comes to magazines, even today, there are places you can't get that. Like, in Cincinnati, almost all of Ohio, Hustler is illegal.
Right.
You have to import Hustler, and you have to do it on the quiet, too.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and there are, like, okay, go to Hustler's website, for example, and there are three states, Ohio, I think, Arkansas, and there's another one that they cannot ship to. You cannot get a subscription to Hustler from their website or get videos or back issues because it is illegal for them to ship over state lines to those states. That, to me, in 2013 is disgusting, Scott.
Well, it's ridiculous. Especially, you know, how are they going to ban that magazine? Let's say that Hustler comes out with an e-issue.
They do. You can get internet subscriptions.
So, you know, if you're in that state, are you going to...
Is their ISP going to block this website or something?
Which would just raise my hackles beyond all belief, but...
Oh, absolutely. But then you've also got, speaking of the internet, what made the internet so popular? Oh, yeah. Pornography. Do you really think people wanted to share movie reviews and email? No. The adult industry is what pushed the internet.
Actually, not as much as you think. And certainly not as much as it pushed VHS.
It pushed DVD a lot, too.
It may push DVD a lot, but frankly, when it comes to pornography, I think their poll is... When it comes to the internet, it was a little bit less because you had the big killer app of the internet was email. Everybody loved email. You could write a letter without having to throw a stamp on it and actually mail it out somewhere. So the big killer app of the internet was email. And then, the adult sites started creeping in at the very beginning. But frankly, it was e-commerce that pushed it. It was places like Amazon and Yahoo Shopping and Frugal at the time. I don't know what it's called now. I think Google Shop or Google Play or something.
Because like what I'm referring to is like way back in even as early as 95.
Yeah.
You had pay porno sites that were making more money than Amazon.
Well, they were
they were not. People wanted their porn.
People wanted their porn, and there were plenty of people making a living. And for the longest time, until recently, the most expensive domain name out there was sex.com.
I'm sure it was.
It was just surpassed by another one, but I can't remember what it was. But anyway, it was commerce. It was Amazon. It was Frugal. It was these shopping sites that really pushed internet penetration into homes and stuff like that.
Did it explode?
It pushed it right into the homes and just exploded all over the walls of consumers.
It exploded right into their face.
Spread it all over their faces. Wow, that was a road trip line.
You just went gay on us there.
No, I was the queen of hearts.
but you understand what I mean.
Yes, like, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you mean. When it comes to porn, it pushed a lot of things. It's just that when it comes to the internet, I'm going to fight you on that one, the internet as a whole. Can you make a living doing adult sites on the internet? Can you make a living being a cam girl, cam guy, cam couple, whatever? Yeah, you can.
But then, okay, then how about this? The Museum of Sex in New York was recently denied tax-exempt status. It's a museum devoted to the history of sex, pornography, sex toys, things like that. It is there for informational purposes. It was denied tax-exempt status from the state of New York for, quote, not having socially relevant value. Now, before you go on, hold on. The Museum of Yarn is tax-exempt, but the Museum of Sex is not. I'm sorry. I was pissed when I heard this.
Yeah, I can
understand. That is so, okay, that is just them saying the Museum of Yarn, that has social value. This is a museum of dildos and videos? No, there's no social value. Fuck that!
Well, number one, my first retort to that one would be, okay, then go to the History Channel. They have a series called The History of Sex. In fact, they have like five series all devoted to
this incident is a perfect example of the two-facedness. Because New York City, they won't give them tax-exempt status for this, but New York City will sure take all the taxes from the porno movie shot there. Oh, they would die if they lost all that tax money that they got from that. But, oh my God, there's no social value. It's that two-facedness. It's that double standard that fucking pisses me off.
It's the sex negativeness. It's silly. And it all goes back to our puritanical values and this idea. It's really, really become resurgent. So many mega churches here, and I'll fight anyone who goes, no, don't get my religion involved. No, your religion is involved. This
because when you preach against sex, religion's involved.
Right. And I have known, there's no easier target for a church to get people in to fill butts and pews than for a preacher to start railing against porn.
Yeah, it's an easy target.
And it's And it's a popular target because I want to be a good Christian citizen. I'm not going to look at the pornography or at least admit to anybody that I look at pornography. I'm certainly not going to admit that my wife and I enjoy bondage and dominance and that I enjoy wearing little girls' clothing or anything like that.
I hope you're speaking for a conservative now.
I am speaking
and not
for
you.
A conservative, not me. You know, as a conservative, I'm not going to admit any of that to society. I'm going to closet that like you wouldn't believe. But I can go to church and listen to my pastor talk about wanking and spanking and tying up and all of that and how evil it is. And I can sit there and I can say, yeah, brother, that's terrible. I'm going to go use the bathroom. You know, and so, yeah, and it when you talk sex in church, when you talk against pornography and against the adult industry in church, number one, it's a very easy target for pastors, and two, it fills seats.
But then you've got this again, going to the double standard I was talking about before. For instance, when I was talking to Pete Chirilla, 42nd Street Pete on Jackalope, he used to be a distributor of porno movies. You know where his biggest sales were?
Where?
The Bible Belt.
Well, yeah.
So, I mean, he actually had reverends that would order some of the freakiest shit ever. I mean, he's like, no, these people are so repressed against themselves that they are buying just as much porn as you and I are. They just won't admit to it.
Well, yeah, that's a duh situation. And I can tell you from working at the bookstore that I worked at, an adult bookstore, Derek had quite a selection of classic, you know, 1950s, 60s Playboys all the way up until his current subscription. He had like five coming to the bookstore. And then he would have all of the old Spank magazines like Wee and Jugs and some of the weird ones like Barely Legal. Well, that's not really all
that's
that
not really
weird.
Other,
but
everyone's actually one of the few that LFP still prints.
Yeah, but you know, he would have things like Barely Legal, and then he would have the truly out there like
Bondage Monthly and
Bondage,
stuff.
Like Bondage Monthly, Tied Up Nuns, you know, stuff like that. And to tell you the truth, it was about 60-40 as far as revenue. About 60% came from the adult material. And there were times when a man with the little white collar underneath his shirt would come in and very nicely ask Derek, you know, would you mind asking everyone but your employees to leave, and can we close the shop for a little while?
I need to browse.
I'd like to browse.
And then that's the same person that will be, pornography yes. is evil. It speaks to the prurient interest.
Yes.
I just totally went Jello Biafra's version of a preacher there.
Yeah, you did. And it's one of those things that I always laugh at, and it's one of those things that my dad pointed out to me years ago. We were sitting through a railing like that, a great revival against pornography. And my dad, standing in church next to me, he leans down, and I was probably 10. And he goes, Scotty, for not looking at porn, this pastor certainly certainly knows a whole lot about it.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's that line in People vs. Larry Flint where Charles Keating, played by James Cromwell in the movie, is like, pornography is evil. It must be stamped out. You can use my personal library as research material. And he's got all these Hustlers and Penthouses and Playboys and all that. And it's like, yeah, that was research right there, Keating.
Yeah.
I don't know how accurate that part was to truth, but it was a great moment in the movie.
And I can't stress to the Americans listening right now, I can't stress when I went to college and I kind of discovered, I got out from under my parents' rooms and I discovered sex and all of the fun stuff that you can do with it and all of the different flavors it came in. It really changed my mind. And frankly, it was the 2 years over in England and listening to their society and the fun stuff I did over there that really brought me back to this country as what I believe is a sex-positive individual. people are going to have sex. They're going to try different ways of having sex, and they're going to have sex with lots of different people. And to me, this new sex positive attitude that I try and spread amongst those that I know is, as long as you're safe and you're considerate of the people that you're with.
Safe word.
That comes with safety. You're considerate of the people that you're with, and you're caring and giving as far as sex goes. And yes, that comes in different flavors, but you know, then why are married couples expected to be monogamous? If that doesn't work for the marriage, if that doesn't work for those involved, and as long as it's cool with both of them, do your thing.
If it's cool with both of them, fine. I'm still against cheating if not both couples are involved. Well, but, you know, and I'm someone that's been cheated on, so that hurts.
That I understand. But as far as my attitude, I have rules. One, consenting adults. Consenting adults. That's two rules right there. They say it's okay, and that is, if you and your wife decide to become swingers, you both have to agree, you both have to consent. If you decide to bring on a third friend or another friend and she doesn't consent to the situation, that's a no-no. That's
right.
Called rape.
But then
adults, no kids.
Well,
and no animals.
Yeah, I was going to say, to me, there are two I will not even allow in my brain that this is a healthy thing. I mean, even if you like to be pooed on, that's disgusting.
Hey,
but
if you're
okay,
into scatter
I can
water sports, do
right.
your thing. But
animals and
me.
Children are Yeah. I make zero tolerance None. For that. There is no leeway in right. that regard to me. No.
Right.
But we've also got something else in this country, and this only popped up in the last decade or so, that the pornography, or the word porn, has wormed its way into just regular speech to the point where whenever you get excess at anything, you know, whenever there's too much violence in a movie, it's torture porn. Whenever there's I actually heard somebody when they were trying to like nanny state something, you know, about how they were going to regulate everything. They said it was regulator porn. And things, and it's like the word porn has become to mean anything in excess. Do you think that's fair? But no, I mean, can you deny that that's part of our lexicon
no,
now?
I can't.
That porn equals excess in whatever, you know, it's subject porn, something porn.
Okay, well, let's go back to the meaning of the word pornography. It is any type of writing and or pictures or any type of media meant to excite individuals in a sexual way. And so, yeah, when it, you know, when
speaks to the prurient interest. For those that don't know what prurient interest means, when you see something, you read it, whatever, it makes you want to beat off.
You get a half chub. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because prurient is part of the legal definition of obscenity.
Right.
Most people don't know what the prurient interest
right.
is.
And so what, which is actually kind of funny because it's so close to prurient interest. But nonetheless, the prurient interest, anything that strikes the prurient interest. And I'm sorry, I know people that when you talk about geek porn or tech porn, it really, you know, they look at that latest smartphone or they look at the latest tablet or they look at the latest blah, whatever
it is. And they get hard or wet.
And they get hard and or wet or both in some cases. And it really does speak to their prurient interests.
But does that not degrade not just the word porn, but has it kind of lost its punch?
Yes, and I think
porn used to be, when you said porn, you knew you were talking about sex, pornography.
Right, right,
now
right.
when you say like torture porn, someone maybe from another country would look at those two words and go, torture porn. So is that like really hardcore S&M? And they'll, you know, and not realizing it's what Eli Roth thinks is attractive, you know?
It's teenagers go party, blah happens.
To me, it degrades the word.
To me, it degrades the word, but to me, that's a good thing. Because I think this country, in order to become partially or to move towards sex positivity, needs to degrade the impact of the word porn. I mean, think about when you and I were growing up, porn, you heard about, but it was a dirty, dirty thing.
Underground.
Yeah, it was an underground, dirty, dirty thing. Thanks a lot to the internet, and thanks a lot to, excuse me, I'm burpy tonight.
I think it even started before the internet, because home video really started to, porn was becoming more mainstream.
And that's what I'm saying. That's never a bad thing. And I have hope that this generation that has grown up with the internet, where porn is even more easily accessible than on VHS when you and I were growing up, I think that we have a chance for the U.S. to finally grow up. Then I listen to political rants and I go, no, never mind. But,
well, you mean people like Rush Limbaugh who don't even know how a woman's reproductive system works? Yeah. And yet he's railing about how porn is evil,
yes.
And he's clearly not been with a woman in a long, long time.
And I gotta be honest, let's look at porn in a positive light. I don't know about you, but I learned a shitload from watching my dad's pornos.
Oh, yeah. And there's another aspect of porn we need to bring up. The most common attack on porn is it's anti-woman.
Oh, my God, no.
Who holds all the Who holds all the power in the porno industry? Who gets paid more? Women.
Yeah.
Who gets to decide who they will have sex with on camera?
The women.
Yep. The men don't.
And for this, we're talking mainstream porn. There is, of course.
We're not talking about fetish
like
porn.
Gonzo porn is what I'm thinking.
Right.
You know, that stuff disgusts me.
But what I mean
anyway,
is. The most common complaint, porn is anti-woman, it's anti-woman, it's anti-woman. No, it's not. It's actually one of the most pro-feminist forms of art that there is when you really get down to it.
We ought to get our old friend back on the show.
Bill.
Yeah,
he'd have a great time talking about this.
Oh, I'm sure he would.
But, you know, we're going to seg off into another completely random topic in a second, but I just wanted to bring this up because it really pissed me off, and I knew you'd have an insight into it that would be interesting.
Yeah, and like I said, it's to sum up where I am and to sum up my insight is that, yes, right now the United States is one of the most sex-negative nations that I know of. And that's not just talking about pornography. That's not just talking about accepting the freaky stuff. That's talking about accepting things that are real and that exist, like homosexuality, like when dealing with even the fringes of sexuality or even the mainstream of sexuality that doesn't quite fit that one man, one woman, for life, missionary position after 6 p.m. with a whole three sheets.
I think what you're
talking
about is the religion,
yeah,
religious aspect.
Not just the religious side of it, not just the procreation, but the recreation. I think that this is one of the most sex-negative countries in the world. And I think that we need to grow up. It's time. And that's one of the things that I love about the internet. That's why I love, you know, you can do things like search Hello Kitty on the internet and end up with Hello Kitty porn if your safe search is off. And I think that the more that this becomes ingrained in the younger generation, that as the old fuckers start dying out, as I really wish they would.
I used to play a prank on people back when I worked at 26.
Yeah.
If they left their computer unlocked, I'd go turn safe search off. So whenever they were Googling images for the news, they would always find a porn image too.
I always
thought that was funny.
I always had fun timing it to go to some of the shock sites like Goatsy and some of the other ones. So they'd be sitting there and then all of a sudden their browser would pop up and there it was.
But I also wanted to talk to you about a certain tech thing.
Okay.
I don't think we could get a whole show out of this, so that's why it's a half show.
Okay.
Why is it in movies and TV do writers, especially writers who don't know what the hell they're talking about, think technology is the same as magic?
Well, there is that old quote of any sufficiently advanced technology will appear to be magic.
Because,
be
you know, because like you watch one of the most tech ignorant shows ever, like NCIS.
Oh, yeah.
They have the internet that is just, they have the internet doing things that Videodrome couldn't have done, you know? Well, that it's like, first of all, you've got hacking. I love hacking in movies.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got two people typing on the same keyboard, and we're breaking through their firewall. Oh, my God, there's a bot on us, and oh, we got to beat this fight. Oh, shut up. You're just yelling out random words.
One of my favorites, and CSI, pick NCIS, CSI, they're both terrible at this. Well, we have this digital footage from said video.
We're going to add resolution. No,
look at the reflection in the video or in the window across. Okay, enhance that. All right, now pan down. Now bring it. Pan down. I love that one.
Yeah.
Tilt, you stupid. You have cameras right there.
But you and I are cameramen, yeah. So that word means something different.
Nonetheless, they're like, okay, now go down. Now enhance that and bring this. Can you bring out, you know, this 2-pixel resolution picture
the ones I like are sometimes where they can't, and they'll be like, I have to run it through like a quantum interface filter to get this, and you go, just stop.
You're like, you can't do that.
Or
here, I have this DNA 10 minutes later. Here, I have the results for you.
More like 10 weeks later at best, and that's if it's rushed.
Yes. But So there's a really simple explanation for all of this.
Cinematic shorthand?
Cinematic shorthand for one, and that's for like the DNA and stuff like that. It's an hour long show.
Well, you could do like Law and Order, where after they got arrested,
the dong dong is the passing time.
Yeah, no, because they always had the date, so you'd notice it's like 7 months later when they actually arrive in court. I appreciated that. You're telling the same story, but technically all these stories are taking place simultaneously, you know, in multiple episodes. I appreciated the complexity of that.
I understand that completely, but I understand the cinematic shorthand. I understand why they do it. They want to tell a story. They're not scientists. They're storytellers.
But doesn't that come down to laziness, Scott? Such as I was watching on SF Debris. He was Chuck was recently reviewing a Star Trek Voyager episode, and at one point, Tuvok made a line about some planet they were scanning, and it pulses like a quasar. Chuck just stops the episode. Quasars don't pulse.
No, they don't.
They don't come close to pulsing. So you just kind of go, did the writer just grab a random word? Hey, this sounds sci-fi-y. A quasar now pulses. It's just, you know, really,
why couldn't they just call it a pulsar, which does pulse in the name?
But you see what I'm saying about how it's... it's just lazy that you're not even trying to seem realistic.
But you have to understand, too, who is their audience? And is their audience going
for
to
Star
understand
Trek? For Star Nerds Trek? Nerds who know what a quasar is.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's just talking down to your audience.
Yeah, that's true. But back to things like, the movie Hackers.
Oh, my God, one of the most unrealistic movies I've ever seen.
While they're hacking and they've got the images projected on their face from the screen.
Which, by the way, just on a director photography kind of level, do you realize how bright that screen would have to be to project onto their face?
No,
this is coming from two people who've worked on movies and TV.
Yeah, yeah. You've got the... and it's all stylized and everything like that. I can appreciate that because if you've ever actually... have you ever actually watched anyone hack a website?
No.
Okay, hang on. We're going to pause the show for a moment.
No, hang on.
So that's what hacking a website is really like.
You basically pull up the command prompt and type.
Yeah, and it's really, really boring.
I like the TV shows that make it seem like we're drilling through their firewall. I always picture that this like CGI drill, you know, going through a wall in the computer and shit.
If you remember that movie Hackers, it was almost like playing a video game.
Yeah.
And
they're like chasing, and oh no, he's found me, and it's like, oh fuck you.
And then you had those cute little graphics that, you know, you have just been acid burned.
Do you remember when they went into the server room and it looked like something out of Tron?
Yes.
These giant glowing towers, and it's like, have you ever seen a computer server before?
And it's and especially when he was there searching for the file. He was like flying through a city.
Yeah, it was like a cityscape.
And he came upon the building, and there was the file, trash.txt or whatever the hell it was. And it's what's hilarious about that is, yes, that is what's going on in the hacker's mind, especially in the 90s. That's what you were thinking you were doing, because Tron. you know, so yeah, that's what's going on in the hacker's brain. That's not it's, but hacking is boring. You saw it. It's boring as hell to watch.
Crack.com recently did a movie hacker versus real life hacker video where, you know, they're getting shot at and they're like, make it go faster. And he's just eating Doritos. Can't make the computer go faster. He's like, quick, type, just type like in the movie. He's like, that's not how it works. And all the guys are getting killed around him. And he's like, I can't make it hack faster.
Yeah. And what's really funny is I've for fun, I have started my little trace programs and my little sniffer, Wi-Fi sniffer programs and stuff like that. And just for the fart of it, to see if I could or not, I've gotten into my neighbor's Wi-Fi just to see if I could figure out what their password was. Do you realize that to break even the simple encryption that my neighbors have, and it's relatively simple, it took my Wi-Fi sniffer locked onto their deal, and this is from a source that I know, it took my Wi-Fi sniffer 5 weeks to gather enough information that I could start trying passwords, and it took me a further 6 weeks to finally break it. They've got a Time Warner one from the cable company, so it's a little bit more secure than regular stuff, but I did it.
But
it
yeah, in movies, it's just random typing, yeah. And then I'm in!
Yeah, and there we are. I'm in. I see it. And then, you know, the whatever the
oh my God, they've got a worm on me and yeah. All that shit.
Do you know what a worm is? No.
But okay, no, but let's move away from computer for a sec.
Okay.
But just other kind of technology.
But just to make sure that people understand, I know it's boring. And I know that when they make a movie or TV show, they have to make it exciting.
But that's I don't think all. They need to talk down to the audience. I don't think they need to make it stupid.
Depends on who the audience is.
But then you've got ones, and this has been a complaint ever since the post-Star Wars era in movies. Whenever a TV show or a movie, like, do you remember the movie Enemy Mine?
Yeah.
With Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr.?
Yes.
In that, how the human, when he had his sidearm, it was a gun, a regular bullet-firing pistol.
Yes.
And they're like, okay, so you've got spaceships and you've got all this stuff, but you don't have laser guns? Yeah, as Harlan Ellison put it, do you realize how difficult it would be to make a portable-sized laser that would not be thrown off by the slightest touch of misaligning the mirrors? They're like, no, even 200 years from now, bullets are still going to be the most economical way to kill somebody. It's not going to be portable lasers.
No. They'll be out there, and I'll probably have something similar. I think it was a 747. They had one of the giant lasers mounted to, or some jumbo jet, or maybe a C-50, one of the military big jets. But they had a laser mounted to it. They launch a missile. They hit the missile on the way up with the laser, and it explodes. But again, it's not pew, pew, pew. It's beam on.
Me. Boom.
Boom. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. But I just, that's been a complaint ever since Star Wars, because everyone in that fires lasers. So they're like, oh, you're firing bullets? You just couldn't afford the effect for the lasers. And it's like,
no.
Actually, no. That's more realistic to have fucking bullets than it is laser beams. Or, I'm sorry.
You know, I think the next thing that we'll have is probably portable Gauss guns or portable rail guns.
Maybe. But I just, like, that's one where it just seems like the audience thinks technology can do this. Or even something like, you see TV shows that have, like, transporters and things, and they're only set 10, 15 years in the future. And you go, yeah, a reliable human transporter. No.
No.
To me, some people are going to call me on bullshit on what I just said. There's a difference between science fiction and science fantasy. When you've got transporters 15 years from now, you're in the realm of fantasy land.
Yeah.
Science fiction would say, okay, maybe this happens and we can transport maybe inanimate objects or something like that. There's a difference between science fiction and science fantasy. Science fantasy is just make up whatever the goddamn hell you want.
And then there's things like hard sci-fi, which really delves into what could happen. And
well, and one of the big complaints I always hear about that, and I disagree with this, is hard sci-fi is boring, Scott. It's boring. So it's something like the Andromeda Strain, the original movie. Oh, it's so boring. You also realize it's absolutely scientifically accurate, though,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
That's what a real Andromeda strain would be like. It wouldn't be a big adventure to stop the strain from spreading, and we got to shoot it and blow it up and fire planes at it. And no, it's a bunch of scientists sitting in a room trying to figure it out.
Launch a missile at the microbes. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, it's know. Like, I'm sorry, the Andromeda Strain is a phenomenal movie that's scientifically accurate. I don't get when people go, it's just so boring.
It is, well, again, you know, that's comparing your audiences. Yes, a lot of... Well, Phase 4.
Brilliant. Fucking brilliant.
Movie. Brilliant movie. Very slow-paced. Andromeda Strain, brilliant. Very slow-paced.
And like, with Phase 4... You kind of get, and the movie's not ridiculous at all when you see it.
Right.
But if you tell people it's about super intelligent ants that take over the world, they go, that's just dumb. But then when you see it in the movie, you go, this is done brutally realistically, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, when you first told me about it, the first thing that came into my mind was that 1950s nuclear-sized gigantic ant.
And
I thought it was that kind of an ant that took over the world.
No, I'm like, no, whatever. Regular ants. Yeah.
And then I smacked you and called you an idiot. Then you made me watch the movie.
And you were like, this was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
I remember you came to work the next day. How the fuck did I never see this before?
But you have to understand, though, that we're talking about different audiences. When you have a generation that did grow up on MTV and that did grow up on... Flashy, flashy, change, 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 stimulus, 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 stimulus. It's not going to be all that exciting. I guarantee that if Hackers were made in 1972, and instead of showing the projected graphics on the screen and showed hacking as it really was, I guarantee it would have held the audience's attention.
It was. The movie called The Paper Man. Have you ever seen that?
Never.
It's about four college... It gets ridiculous at the end when it makes a stupid plot twist, but it's more of a murder mystery, really. But it's about four computer science students in, like, 1975, something like that, who decide to create a man that doesn't exist so they can use his credit cards and things like that. You know, they've gotten him a birth certificate and everything, and they create it all on the computer. And then in the third act, plot twist... The man actually comes to life and the computer becomes self-aware.
Automan.
Yeah, but for the first half, it's kind of like, you know, huge afros and giant room-sized computers, but it was kind of a 70s version of Hackers, kind of.
Almost, or perhaps a 70s version of Identity Thief.
Yeah, because what happens is each person, they start dying and they think the other ones are trying to get control of the Paper Man, and it turns out it was the Paper Man himself.
Ah.
It's a really good movie, actually.
It's like a dark, dark version of Weird Science.
But, I mean, that's kind of an interesting plot, though, especially for the 70s. That was pretty ballsy to deal with computers like that.
Sure.
But you've also got other things like spaceships. Like, I love... when people watch movies like Alien and they're like, you know, how come the spaceships aren't like in Star Wars where they're wee, wee, wee and making noise and there's all this space? And you go, do you guys realize that space travel, even by the year Alien was supposed to take place in, would still be relatively a new thing to the point where you don't have space you don't use.
Right.
You don't have oxygen in the compartments you don't use,
right.
You know? It's you can't store all the food you would need for this trip. The ship can only go so fast. Physics says so.
Right.
You know, people got used to TIE fighters in space, and you go, that's not how a spaceship would bank. You don't bank in space.
A spaceship wouldn't bother banking.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You don't bank in space. You don't have sound in space.
Right.
Which that's the one that George Lucas was purely pandering. And I quote, people expect to hear a boom, so I give them a boom.
Yep.
That's just saying the audience wouldn't accept it if it were there was no boom, so I'm pandering.
Well, if there were an explosion in space, you would see it, and then eventually the shockwave of the gases and stuff would reach you, so you would hear it at that point, or you would feel the compression at the very least.
Well, and then you've also got another space one. And I love the movie, but... Outland seemed to have set the standard for you get a rip in your spacesuit, you just explode. That's not how it works.
No.
I hate to say this because I'm about to praise Paul W.S. Anderson. The scene where Jack Noseworthy gets exposed to vacuum in Event Horizon is realistic how that would happen.
Yeah.
I hate to say a Paul W.S. Anderson movie was realistic, but it was in that regard.
Yes. Well, if you even a show as simple as Robotech, do you remember when Rick had to go through, I forget why he was going out through the airlock and then...
They were trapped in a part of the ship after the SDF-1 had transformed.
Yes.
And they couldn't get anywhere, so he had to go out to try and trigger an alarm so somebody would notice that they were there.
That's
and he
right.
had to like put the bag around his head. And
yeah.
I mean, he wasn't in a space suit.
Right.
He could survive the vacuum for X number of minutes
right.
before dying. Really, the cold and the radiation would have been more of a threat than the pressure.
And well, the cold, the solar radiation, and then the lack of air.
But yeah, but if you can hold your breath.
Before the pressure does.
Because like a movie like 2010... brutally scientifically realistic.
Yes.
And there's the point where they're going from the Leonov to the Destiny, and they're like, they can't, you know, they need to hurry this up. They can't survive the radiation out there for more than 3 more minutes.
Right.
You know, and that was a bigger concern than anything else, that
yes.
the radiation's going to cook these people.
Yep. Because you have things like the moon where it goes from 300 degrees during the day to negative 300 at night. And yes, I realize that's not accurate. Because
he's making an example.
I am going to get messages. I'm going to actually on the moon. Me.
Are you Futurama's fans? Remember when they found the moon lander still on the moon in like the second episode? They got so much mail. The moon lander made it back to Earth.
Exactly.
And he's like, oh yeah, well maybe in the 1,000 years they put it back as a monument. Shut up, people. It was a fucking joke.
Actually, there was one that did more than that. Do you remember when Fry befriended the narwhal?
Yes, it was actually in the movie.
They had to add a line. It is a rare horned female narwhal, because they made the narwhal female through the whole episode. Female narwhals don't have the horns.
Well, yeah, because Futurama's got fans that will nitpick the shit out of the science. And in a show like Futurama, sorry, science is not really a focus.
Well, yeah.
You know?
It is and it isn't. It's kind of weird. They're like, well, we'll stretch it, but... not that far,
but,
in many respects.
Okay, we're running out of time, but I don't like how Hollywood says, technology says this happens, so it can happen in this movie, you know, that takes place in the future.
Well, Hollywood, again, often goes, we say technology will be able to do this. And so they kind of stretch it a lot. And I understand why. It's because for the most part, look, I went to school for IT engineering, and for the most part, it's hours and hours and hours of work with various wires and lines and soldering and moving things around and programming little routers.
It's not nearly as glamorous
as the movies. In order to have one light go from yellow to green.
Well, yeah, there's a great joke in the new WKRP from the 90s.
Right.
Where the engineer is stripping all the coating off all the wires and just making it all black. They're like, why are you doing that? He goes, some idiot went and color-coded these so you guys would know what was going on. They're like, yeah. He goes, job security. I'm making them all black. You know, you can't get rid of me. I'm the only one that knows how this fucking station's wired. I'm just like, that's brilliant. Job security.
Yeah. And I can tell you from making microwave radios, too, you want that green light. Please, please, go from red to green. Please, please, you fucker.
So, but we guys hope you enjoyed our schizophrenic porn and tech episode.
Exactly. They go well together.
They do.
But nonetheless, thanks a lot for joining us. Hit Adam and Eve and use our promo code for us, please. Especially since we don't have the Amazon links up as of recording.
Nope. Cassandra is about to get my website back up.
We're working on it.
We've gotten the domain back and everything. So.
Okay. So thanks a lot for joining us. We will see you next time.
Bye.